Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to New Heights Show on Education. This is your host, Kathy Woodring, and joining me is co-host Angela Pamela Clark, and an excellent mentor. She is founder, director of the New Heights Educational Group. She has been an excellent mentor, and her help is really appreciated. Today's show topic is Evolution of American Philosophy. You can call in to speak with us anytime during the show at 347-663-9225 or contact New Heights at 419-786-0247 or New Heights Education at yahoo.com or visit our site at www.newheightseducation.org. You can also chat with us live during any of the shows. A special thank you goes to Chris Schmidt of Smyrna, Georgia, for donating his car. This act of kindness is very much appreciated. We received the check today. New Heights continues to offer its biweekly enrichment day and or co-op classes. Next class will be on February 28th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Classes will be held in Defiance at the Zion Lutheran Church. Please note that the classes are not religion-based unless families want there to be one. Students, parents, and students are required to participate in the classes and help with the planning of them. We are offering a reading time, science class, and Irish dancing and karate, and are open to more suggestions. Students are invited to not only attend but to participate in instructing some of the classes. If you are interested in participating, volunteering, or tutoring, please contact us directly. Tutors and our teachers are needed. We are in need of tutors and our teachers in Defiance and Putnam County, and one that would be like to volunteer should contact us directly. There are also some paid opportunities. We currently need reading tutors. On Sunday, March 8th, 2014, we will be holding our student advisory meeting in Holgate, Ohio, and online. If you are interested in student leadership opportunities, we urge you to consider attending. We will also be discussing the new student leadership council that we recently launched for older youth. The new National Student Leader Council, which is for students in grade 9 through college, and students aged 14 through 23. This is open to the public, and any student from any state is eligible to participate. All students entering the Leadership Council must have at least a 3.0 GPA. The council aims to help students build academics, talents, leadership, and community service, along with other skills. On Sunday, March 9th, 2014, we are planning a bake sale and our candy sale. Place and time to be announced. Now to our show topic, Evolution of American Philosophy. The last episode described four awakenings, with the first two having involvement in many areas. Therefore, this episode will cover the passions and philosophies from the 18th century and the profound impact they had on America's founding. Much of this episode is based on the philosophy of John Locke, who seems to be more connected to the Enlightenment and or Age of Reason than the philosophies of the Great Awakenings. However, both Enlightenment and the first two awakenings occurred during the same time in the 18th century, and both were linked to individual liberties. The first two Great Awakenings seem to be focused on the link between the church and government, and the Enlightenment and our Age of Reason focused on the relationship between government and people. Old lights and new lights were mentioned last episode. Odalites were suspicious of the revivals and their seeming threat to authority, thereby refusing change. Newlites embraced the revivals. George Whitefield was a Newlite revivalist. Wikipedia gives the following description. In the 1700s, Odalites were simply Orthodox members of the clergy who believed that the new ways of revivals and emotional preaching were unnecessary. Newlites were the more modern thinking members of the clergy who strongly believed in the Great Awakening. These conflicting opinions changed certain denominations, helped popularize missionary work, and assisted in the founding educational centers now known as Ivy League schools. Answers.com illustrates the major influence of John Locke to America. John Locke was an Englishman. English's stance was against not having an absolute monarch to rule over them, and John Locke's writings were to influence the America that would come later on. The connection that John Locke had to the English Civil Wars and the Glorious Revolution, and they to him, is that he believed kings should uphold man's unalienable rights to life, health, liberty, and possessions. He said this in his writings: "No one ought to harm another in his life, health, liberty, or possessions, for man being all the workmanship of one omnipotent and infinitely wise maker. Because Charles I, Charles II, and James I all failed to protect inalienable rights of the English citizens, Locke believed that it was the people's job to overthrow them. It was the beginning of the ideas of government by the people, for the people, of the people." Answers.com continues with a profound quote: "America is great because she is good. If America ceases to be good, America will cease to be great." By Alexis de Tocqueville, 1805 to 1859. Plato.stanford.edu addresses Locke's political philosophy. John Locke, 1632 to 1704, is among the most influential political philosophers of the modern period. In the two treatises of government, he defined the claim that men were by nature free and equal against claims that God had made all people naturally subject to a foundation independent of the laws of any particular society. Locke used the claim that men are naturally free and equal as part of the justification for understanding legitimate political government as a result of a social contract where people in a state of nature conditionally transfer some of their rights to the government in order to better ensure the stable, comfortable enjoyment of their lives, liberty, and property. Since governments exist by the consent of the people in order to protect the rights of the people and promote the public good, governments that fail to do so can be resisted and replaced with new governments. Locke is thus also important for his defense of the right of revolution. Locke also defends the principle of majority rule in the separation of legislative and executive powers. In the letter concerning toleration, Locke denied that coercion should be used to bring people to what the ruler believes is the true religion, and also denied that churches should have any coercive power over the members. Locke elaborated on these rulings in his later political writings, such as the second letter on toleration and the third letter on toleration. Plato.stanford.edu continues with addressing the nature of law, the law of nature. Perhaps the most central concept in Locke's political philosophy is his theory of natural law and natural rights. The natural law concept existed long before Locke as a way of expressing the idea that there were certain moral truths that applied to all people, regardless of the particular place where they lived or the arguments they had made. The most important early contrast was between laws that were by nature and thus generally applicable and those that were conventional and operated only in those places where the particular convention had been established. This distinction is sometimes formulated as the difference between natural law and positive law. Natural law is also distinct from divine law in that the latter, in the Christian tradition, normally referred to those laws that God had directly revealed through prophets and other inspired writers. Natural law can be discovered by reason alone and applies to all people, while divine law can be discovered only through God's special revelation and applies only to those to whom it is revealed and who God specifically indicates are to be bound. Thus, some 17th century commenters, Locke included, held that not all of the Ten Commandments, much less the rest of the Old Testament law, were binding on all people. The Ten Commandments began, "Hear, O Israel," and thus are the only binding on the people to whom they were addressed. Even though Locke thought natural law could be apart from special revelation, he saw no contradiction in God playing a part in the argument so long as the relevant aspects of God's character could be discovered by reason alone. In Locke's theory, divine law and natural law are consistent and can overlap in content, but they are not coextensive. Thus, there is no problem for Locke if the Bible commands a moral code that is stricter than the one that can be derived from natural law. But there is a real problem if the Bible teaches what is contrary to natural law. In practice, Locke avoided this problem because consistency with natural law was one of the criteria he used when deciding the proper interpretation of biblical passages. Now Pamela will further talk about Locke and the Enlightenment.
Thank you, Kathy. And Suite101.com also addresses John Locke and the Enlightenment. Locke was not quiet about his rejection of the absolutist system that took for granted that the royal line was a divine line. Published work regarding his theories on absolutism and his growing reputation as a royal dissenter resulted in Locke's exile to Holland in 1682. While in Holland, Locke wrote his very influential work, An Essay Concerning an Understanding. In 1690, Locke published two treatises on the order of government. These were considered influential works in the American and French Revolutions. Locke's argument was that revolution against tyranny
Yeah, it looks like Pamela had to stop, and where she left off was the revolution against tyranny. Locke's argument was that revolution against tyranny was an acceptable form of rebellion to bring legitimate rule to a nation. Locke's theory on education based on practical experience, in contrast to the current philosophical teachings, evolved during this time. His ideas on universal education that would help a child become a well-rounded individual remain with us still. Fee.org, in an article titled John Locke, Natural Rights to Life, Liberty, and Property, The Writings of Locke and How He Inspired the American Revolution, is addressed. A number of times throughout history, tyranny has stimulated breakthrough thinking about liberty. This was certainly the case in England with the mid-17th century era of repression, rebellion, and civil war. There was a tremendous outpouring of political pamphlets and tracts. By far, the most influential writings emerged from the pen of the of scholar John Locke. He expressed the radical view that government is morally obliged to serve people, namely by protecting life, liberty, and property. He explained the principle of checks and balances to limit government power. He favored representative government and a rule of law. He denounced tyranny. He insisted that when government violates individual rights, people may legitimately rebel. These views were most fully developed in Locke's famous second treatise concerning civil government, and they were so radical that he never dared sign his name to it. He acknowledged authorship only in his will. Locke's writings did much to inspire the libertarian ideals of the American Revolution. Thus, this in turn set an example which inspired people throughout Europe, Latin America, and Asia. Thomas Jefferson ranked Locke, along with Locke's compatriot Algernon Sidney, as the most important thinkers on liberty. Locke helped inspire Thomas Paine's radical ideas about revolution. Locke fired up George Mason. From Locke, James Madison drew his most fundamental principles of liberty and government. Locke's writings were part of Benjamin Franklin's self-education, and John Adams believed that both boys and girls should learn about Locke. The French philosopher Voltaire called Locke the man of the greatest wisdom. What he has not seen clearly, I despair of ever seeing. Fee.org continues with Locke's two treatises on government. Locke's two treatises on government were published in October 1689 with a 1690 date on the title page. While later philosophers have belittled it because Locke based his thinking on the archaic notions about a state of nature, his bedrock principles endure. He's defined the natural law tradition, whose glorious lineage goes back to the ancient Jews. The tradition that rulers cannot legitimately do anything they want because there are moral laws applying to everyone. Reason, which is the law Locke declared, teaches all mankind who would but consult in it that being all equal and independent, no one ought to harm another in his life, health, liberty, or possessions. Locke envisioned a rule of law, having a standing rule to live by, common to everyone of the society, and made by the legislative power erected in it. A liberty to follow my own will in all things where the rule prescribes not, and not to be subject to the inconsistent, uncertain, unknown, arbitrary will of another man. Locke established that private property is absolutely essential for liberty. Every man has a property in his own person. This nobody has a right to but himself. The labor of his body and the work of his hands, we may say, are properly his. Locke continues, the great and chief end, therefore, of men's uniting into commonwealths and putting themselves under government is the preservation of their property. Locke believed people legitimately turned common property into private property by mixing their labor with it and improving it. Marxists like to claim that this meant Locke embraced the labor theory of value, but he was talking about the basis of ownership rather than value. He insisted that people, not rulers, are sovereign. Government, Locke, can never have a power to take to themselves the whole or any part of the subject's property without their consent, for this would be, in effect, to leave them no property at all. He makes this point even more explicit. Rulers must not raise taxes on the property of the people without the consent of the people, given by themselves or their deputies. Locke had enormous foresight to see beyond the struggles of his own day, which were directed against monarchy. 'Tis a mistake to think this fault, tyranny, is proper only to monarchies. Other forms of government are liable to it as well as that. For wherever the power that is put into any hands for the government of the people and the preservation of their properties is applied to the other ends and made use of to impoverish, harass, or subdue them than the arbitrary and irregular commands of those that have it. There it presently becomes tyranny, whether those that thus use it are one or many. Then Locke affirmed an explicit right to revolution. Whenever the legislators endeavor to take away and destroy the property of the people or to reduce them to slavery under arbitrary power, they put themselves into a state of war with the people, who are thereupon absolved from any further obedience and are left to the common refuge which God hath provided for all men against force and violence. Whensoever, therefore, the legislative shall transgress this fundamental rule of society and either by arbitration, fear, folly, or corruption endeavor to grasp themselves or put into the hands of any other an absolute power over the lives, liberties, and estates of the people, Locke stated, by this breach of trust, they forfeit their power. The people had put into their hands for quite contrary ends, and it develops to the people who have a right to resume their original liberty. To help assure his anonymity, he dealt with the printer through the friend Eric Clark. Locke denied rumors that he was the author, and he begged his friends to keep their speculations to themselves. He cut off those like James Tyrrell, who persisted in talking about Locke's authorship. Locke destroyed the original manuscripts in his will, signed shortly before he died. Ironically, the two treatises caused hardly a stir during his life. Locke's byline did appear with an essay concerning human understanding published December 1689, when it established him as England's leading philosopher. He challenged the traditional doctrine that learning consisted entirely of reading ancient texts and absorbing religious dogmas. He maintained that understanding the world required observation. He encouraged people to think for themselves. He urged that reason to be the guide. He warned that without reason, men's opinions are not the product of any judgment or the consequence of reason, but the effects of chance and hazard of a mind floating at all ventures without choice and without direction. This book became one of the most widely reprinted and influential works on philosophy. In 1693, Locke published Some Thoughts Concerning Education, which offered many ideas as revolutionary now as they were then. Thomas Hobbes had insisted that education should promote submission to authority, but Locke declared education is for liberty. Locke believed that setting a personal example is the most effective way to teach moral standards and fundamental skills, which is why he recommended homeschooling. He objected to government schools. He urged parents to nurture the unique genius of each child. Locke also addressed some consideration of the consequences of the lowering of interest and raising the value of money, 1691, which appeared anonymously. He explained that market action follows natural laws and that government intervention is counterproductive. When individuals violated government laws, like usury laws, restricting interest rates, Locke blamed government for enacting the laws. When individuals violated government laws restricting interest rates, Locke blamed government for enacting the laws. Locke warned against debasing money and urged that the mint use full-weight silver coins. His view prevailed. Fee.org concludes that during recent decades, some thinkers like novelist philosopher Ayn Rand and economist Murray Rothbard revived a compelling moral case for liberty. They provided a meaningful moral standard for determining whether laws are just. They drew the clearest possible line by which neither a ruler nor a majority nor a bureaucrat nor anyone else in government could legitimately go. They inspired millions as they sounded the battle cry that people everywhere are born with equal rights to life, liberty, and property. they stood on the shoulders of John Locke. Locke is one of the many extremely influential 18th century philosophers because of the change occurring during his time. The next episode will continue with the evolution of American philosophy. I wish to thank Pamela for co-hosting and for her direction. She was a lot of help. And thanks for joining us tonight. Please join us again next Sunday at 11 p.m. Thanks again to Chris Schmidt of Schmirma, Georgia, for donating his car. We want to wish Pamela and Greg Clark's oldest son, Matt Clark, a happy 25th birthday. We hope one. Please remember to join Sadia Ijaz on Fridays at 6 p.m. and Karen Behan on Saturdays at 6 p.m. and me, your host, Kathy Woodring, on Sundays at 11 p.m. Thanks for listening, and have a great night.
You raise me up so I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy. I am on your shoulders. You raise me up to more than I can be. You raise me
to be a user.